Welcome to Practical Christian Living.
There's always a however with God, always. Even if you've entered into catastrophic failure, even if your life is, it now looks like I have no hope and I have no direction, my life has been destroyed, I'm grinding corn in a circle, there's always a however with God. God never abandons his people.
It seemed Samson's life was done, at least to the world. He had failed. He had ignored God and as a result found himself miserable and defeated by sin. But with God, even the biggest failures can be restored, made new and used in mighty ways. It is the story of Samson's life, and today may be yours. With Judges chapter 16, here's Robert Furrow, pastor of Calvary, Tucson.
The title of our message today is Samson, a man of faith, with a question mark. So it would be said like this, Samson, a man of faith? And if you have been with us in our study on the life of Samson, then you understand why I put a question mark at the end of that. See, there's only one place that Samson is mentioned outside of the account that we have in the four chapters that we've covered in the book of Judges, and that is in Hebrews chapter 11, where I've had you guys start by opening up today. And if you were to guess what the Bible might have to say about Samson based upon the six studies, this being the seventh, that we've had so far in his life, the last thing that we would expect is that Samson would be commended, that God would say something positive about Samson. I would have thought it was impossible to say anything positive about Samson at all. I think in the time that we've spent in these chapters, I don't know that I've said anything positive about him one time. I think maybe one time I even said, hold on to your seats, folks, I'm going to say something good about Samson. Because a study in his life is not a study by which we learn a lot of positives. We learn a lot of how to avoid catastrophic failure in your life. Do the opposite Samson did. That's what you learn from studying the life of Samson. How do you love God, serve him, love other people, surrender your life for them? How do you become who Christ wants you to be? By living the exact opposite of Samson. So then it surprises us that Samson is spoken of in a positive light in the book of Hebrews. Now let's just take a moment to give a setting for Hebrews chapter 11. It is one of the great chapters in all of the Bible. The Bible tells us that without faith, it is impossible to please God. And faith is the means by which we obtain from God that which is unseen and that which we have not received. Faith is simply believing what God has said enough to live like you believe it. That's what faith is. Faith is calling out upon God, knowing that God can move supernaturally in our lives. Faith is when we will rely upon him, putting our trust in what he has said and seeing that come to pass. So this important topic, the writer of Hebrews, whom I believe to be Paul, begins to talk about the different examples of faith. We are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, he would say, in the beginning of Hebrews chapter 12, making a reference back to all of these witnesses around us, men who have walked by faith, Moses and Abraham and David, just Joseph, all of these men of faith. Now, I want to pick it up in verse, let's start in 29. I want you to get a feel for Paul as he writes this. And you got there's an excitement, there's a build as he's writing this. He is excited about the men of old and how faith was used in their lives and how faith can be used in our lives as well. It's built up to this point where he says, by faith, verse 29, chapter 11 of Hebrews, by faith they passed through the Red Sea as dry land, whereas the Egyptians attempted to do so were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days. By faith, the harlot, Rahab, did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace. And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me if I told you of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, also David, and Samuel the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, and stopped the mouths of lions. Now that's a pretty incredible little section. And in fact, if you've never taken time to read the entire 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews, go back and read it. It is meant to encourage us that God still moves today for men and women that have faith. So my question comes down to, why is Samson in this list? Time would fail me if I tell you of Gideon, God, him, Barak, kind of. Samson, not at all. Jephthah, sort of. David, yes. Samuel, yes. I look at that list and I think, Samson to me is one that doesn't fit. But Samson knew where his strength came from, and he knew that he could call out upon God, even though Samson did not live a righteous life. Now Samson helps us in a certain area. Oftentimes we think that we can receive God's grace when we deserve it. Listen, if I live good, if I don't do anything bad, if I'm perfect for 3 or 4 months, if I can just get my life together, then I'll be a man of faith, then God will use me. That really is a misconception, because grace is what? What's the definition of grace? Undeserved favor. So when you receive God's grace, you don't deserve it. If we were getting from God what we deserve, we would all be very, very hot right now if we got from God what we deserve. So we want from God what is undeserved in our lives. We want grace. We want undeserved favor. So studying the life of Samson is a study that reveals to us the tremendous grace of God. How awesome God's grace is in each one of our lives. Now, turn with me back to Judges 16, and we'll start here. I want to start in verse 21. I know we covered it last week, but I want to start in it again because I want us to get an idea of the condition of Samson once again, just to spend a couple of moments talking about where sin has taken him. Samson had great parents, godly parents. Samson was brought up with many, many blessings. God began to move upon him when he was young, but Samson was incredibly selfish. And Samson ended up making some decisions that led him to be captured by the enemy that he was raised up by God to subdue. He was raised up by God to subdue the Philistines, to free Israel from the occupying force of the Philistines. But now he's captured by them, and it's because of his own stupidity. It's because of his own sin. It's because he's made some mistakes that we scratch our head and go, how could anybody do what Samson did? Now he is, well, we pick it up in verse 21. Then the Philistines took him and put out his eyes. They literally blinded him. They were scared of Samson. Even after they captured him, Samson had killed 1,000 of them with the jawbone of a donkey. He had a great massacre, hip and thigh, without a weapon in his hand. He had massacred many, many of them. They had tried to overcome him. They were fearful in trying to attack him. So now they had him. And having him, they put out his eyes, thinking, let's take away his strength. Let's make sure that he can't harm us anymore. And so they blind him. And they brought him down to Gaza, and they bound him with bronze fetters. And he became a grinder in the prison. They used him like an ox. They would use ox to grind corn. They used Samson as an ox, kind of saying, oh, you big strong guy, let's set you up here. And so Samson's life had suddenly become a grind. Suddenly he had become just circles. He was just walking in circles every day. That's what sin does. Sin starts off with an enticement. Something that we're drawn to inside of us. We want it. We think, I've got it under control. It's never going to get out of hand. I've got it taken care of. And the next thing you know, we are restricted. We are bound. And our lives just one circle. We just end up going in circle after circle after circle. For some of you here, our study in the life of Samson has been hard-hitting. Samson's life entered into catastrophic failure. And for some who are here, your life had entered into catastrophic failure. You had found yourself involved in things you shouldn't be involved in, and your life has taken a turn that is hard, and it's hard for you to hear what happens to Samson. But I love, and I think the key word of this verse, out of all the, out of this chapter, out of all that Samson has been through, is the first word in verse 22. And that is the word, however. There's always a however with God, always. Even if you've entered into catastrophic failure, even if your life is, it now looks like I have no hope and I have no direction, my life has been destroyed, I'm grinding corn in a circle, there's always a however with God. God never abandons his people. Even when we think we ought to be abandoned, even when we want to be involved in beating ourselves up and thinking we don't deserve anything, we shouldn't receive anything, I've done stupid things, I ought to just suffer the rest of my life. And God says, yeah, I agree. However, there's always a however. And you know what, folks? That's such good news. It is so good to know that God is the God of however, that God works in our lives, that he doesn't let us remain where we are. And there's not a person in this room that doesn't have a however out there. I love it. However, the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaven. Now that verse tells us the story's not done yet. The account's not finished. This isn't the end of Samson's life. God is even able to use someone in catastrophic failure. Now again, that amazes me. It amazes me. When someone enters into catastrophic failure, the world tosses them aside. When someone enters into catastrophic failure, God picks them back up again. Isn't that amazing? God restores them again. God is even able to restore the years that the locusts have eaten. God's the God of fresh starts. God is the God of new beginnings. God once again restores and touches lives and brings them back around again. The story's not done yet. Now, Samson's sin caused the Philistines to be confused. Look at verse 23. Now the lords of the Philistines gathered together to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, to rejoice. And they said, our God has delivered into our hands Samson, our enemy. Samson's moral failure had caused the enemies of God to be confused. Our moral failures cause those who don't know God in our day to be confused. When we don't live the way that we are supposed to, when we make decisions like Samson made that eventually will become known because everything that's done in secret, we shout it from the rooftop. You think you got it under control, but you don't. The people around us are confused. I thought you were a Christian. I thought this is the way Christians lived. How come you got involved in this? Now we just saw the however. We know that God is gracious. But we also know that people in the world are greatly confused when there are moral lapses in the life of a believer. That is why I believe it is essential for you and I to love righteousness. Not that we're ever perfect, but to be walking in sincerity with God, to love righteousness, to seek to do what is right, to guard our hearts, because out of it flow the issues of life. If you look at Samson's mistake, one of Samson's mistakes was that he didn't guard his heart. Well, how didn't he guard his heart? He fell in love with Delilah in the valley of Zorek. That led him to his eyes being burned out because he didn't guard his heart. Some of you guys are getting involved with someone you shouldn't be involved in. You're not guarding your heart. You don't know where it's going to take you eventually. And when it takes you to a certain place, the people who don't know Jesus are going to be confused. They're thinking, as they look at your life as a Christian, maybe this guy's got something I don't have. Maybe I need to know Jesus. Maybe, and they're watching you. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. And then they see moral failure. And it's always a sad thing when a non-believer says, I thought as a Christian, you weren't supposed to do that. I hope you've never had that question asked. And I hope you've never justified some stupid sin so that you can be involved in your flesh. I hope that you've never, well, you know what, yeah, Christians aren't supposed to get drunk, but you know what, we're just forgiven, not perfect, okay? Save that for the bumper sticker. Put it on the back of your car if you want to, but don't use it as an excuse for your sin. David, when he fell into sin, God forgave him, but God said to him, because your sin has caused my enemies to blaspheme, I'm going to punish you. Literally, what he said, this is hard to hear. David had had a child out of wedlock by Bathsheba, and God said, David, because your sin caused my enemies to blaspheme, then I'm going to take the life of the child. It's a hard judgment to hear from David. But we never want to be in that place. We never want to be where the enemies of God are blaspheming because of our lack of moral integrity. I was 14 years old when I met the Lord. I backslid when I was 18 years old. Two things happened. I showed up at church one night and I had left the Methodist church that I was in, and I had begun to attend an Assembly of God church. When I walked into the church one evening, the pastor there was a young guy. He was about 25 years old. He was very dynamic. He paced back and forth on the stage. He was a screamer, which for me, I'm a high energy guy. I have trouble keeping my attention on things. And for me, having a guy who paced back and forth and scream on stage was like, this is cool. I can listen to this guy for an hour, you know? I walk in and there's some old guy teaching. This guy must have been, I don't know, 35, 40. He was ancient. And I said to one of my friends as I sat down, I came in late and I sat down, I said, where's Pastor Bob? And he said, you haven't heard. Pastor Bob had an affair with the secretary and he's been removed. Well, that tore me up. Can you imagine? Could you imagine coming here today and hearing that I had an affair and that I'm no longer pastoring? It would be devastating. It was devastating to me. So I got home and I called really someone who had been a mentor to me. He was older. He was at Oral Roberts University. And I called him up to tell him what had happened. I just needed some direction. I needed to talk to someone about what had happened to my pastor. And I called him up and his wife answered the phone. And I asked for him and his wife said, he's not here. And I said, all right. And she said, Robert, he's left me. He had an affair and he's left me. Now at that moment, I walked away from the Lord. At that moment, I left. I left God for a year. Here's what I said. These were the words that came out of my mouth. If this is what Christianity is all about, then I'm done. The moral failure of these two men reflected upon me that I left. I walked away from the Lord. Now, since then, God has spoken to me. I do not believe, and I need to say this, I do not believe that I was where I needed to be at 18 years old spiritually. I was, to sum it up quickly, I had believed in Jesus as a self-help gospel. Invite Jesus into your life, he'll make your life better. You can go wherever you want to go, but invite Jesus in. He can make your life better. That's how I had received Jesus. So the Lord had to shake my world. He had to get me to the place where I went beyond the self-help Jesus into dying for him, into laying my life down for him, into giving everything that I had for him. This is part of God's process. I'm not saying God caused these guys to do this. I'm saying God used their moral failures to shake me to the very core. Now, my friends at church approached me. I'm not going anymore. They'd call me up. Robert, why aren't you going to church? And I'd let them have it, folks. I said to them, don't you talk to me about church at all. This is what Christianity is. Listen, I go and my pastor has an affair and this guy has an affair and this is what it is. I don't want to have anything to do with church. I don't want to have anything to do with you. I was tough. And they would call and try to encourage me to come back. And you know what? They quit calling pretty quick. Because how are you going to argue against that? Really? How do you argue against that? When someone, you know, you call and say, listen, come back to church. We love you. We miss you. Don't you talk to me about missing me and loving me. Here's what he did. Here's what he did. And you kind of go, okay, well, it wasn't me. Goodbye. And they hang up the phone. Now, the enemies of God blaspheme here because of Samson's moral failure. I've also got to believe that Samson's moral failure didn't do anything to bolster Israel. Didn't do anything to encourage Israel. Didn't encourage Israel to be godly or to seek godly ways, right? Now, they think that their god, Dagon, was the one who delivered them into their hands. Now, Dagon is completely and totally useless. Dagon is a fish. the Philistines worshiped a fish. He had the body of a man, but he had the head of a fish. How would you like to worship? How would you like that to be your God? Remember earlier when the Ark of the Covenant had been captured in the midst of battle? They had thought that if they took the Ark of the Covenant into battle, it would guarantee them a win. And when they brought it into battle, this is under the priest Eli, they took it into battle and the Ark of the Covenant was captured. When Eli heard about it, he said, "Ichabod, the glory has departed," and he fell off his bench backwards, and he was a big man, and he fell on his neck, and he broke his neck, and he died when the ark got captured. Well, the Philistines took it into their temple for Dagon. When they got up the next morning, there was the Ark of the Covenant, and there was Dagon on his face. And so they had to pick up their God. Now, anytime you've got to pick up your God, you're in trouble. You know, if you are serving a God and you go, "Oh, my God fell down," you got to pick him up. See, our God picks us up, right? We don't pick up our God. Well, they had to pick up their God and put him back. Okay, it's all right. The next morning they got up and Dagon was on his face again, but this time on the fall, his head had broken off and his hands had broken off. And so they removed the Ark of the Covenant from the temple of Dagon. They decided, let's go ahead and get this thing out of there. And they moved it to another town. And everybody in that town, this is just true, the truth. Look, I don't want to be gross, but it's just the truth. Everybody in that town got hemorrhoids. And so they moved it to another town, and everybody in that town got hemorrhoids. And it's really a kind of a funny story as it moves around. But Dagon is completely powerless. This fish head god is not going to be able to, hasn't delivered Samson into their hands. This fish head god was powerless to do anything against Samson. What was the reason Samson was in the hands of the Philistines? Because Samson was dumb. That's why. The Bible says Psalms a few years ago. I'd say a few years ago, 20 years ago or so, after we'd been going for about 5 years, Scott Richards, who had been a friend of mine, and Scott pastors another Calvary across town, Scott had called and said, "Listen, I'm going to come to Tucson. I'm going to start a Calvary." I felt a bit insecure about that. Scott has a program on at 5 o'clock. He does a lot of questions and answers. Scott's incredibly bright. He is an incredibly bright guy. You put me next to Scott, I'm very dim compared to Scott. And I was insecure about that. And I felt like Scott's going to come to town and everybody's going to go to his Calvary Chapel and no one's going to be at mine. That night, I'm reading the script, just going through my normal place in Psalms. There's a Psalms that says, "What God has established, no man can destroy." And the Lord just spoke to my heart. As God has said to me on many occasions, settle down, settle down. What God's established, no man can destroy. God's the one who's established the work here. There's one person who could destroy it, and that's me. That's it. It has been established. Now, the only one who could destroy Samson was Samson. And so they're confused. They think their God Dagon delivered them. And verse 24, when the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, "Our God has delivered into our hands our enemy, the destroyer of the land, and the one who multiplied our dead." We would put a knot at the end of that. Verse 25, so what happened when their hearts were merry, they said, "Call for Samson that he may perform for us." So they called for Samson from the prison and he performed for them. The word "performed" there doesn't mean that he came out and did tricks for them or magic tricks or gymnastics or bent steel or broke bats over his knee or tore phone books in half. That's not the word "perform." The word "perform" here literally is connected to torment. He was performing by them harassing him. They were mocking him. Their entertainment was to bring Samson out and to mock him. "Well, you big, strong Samson, what are you doing now? Who's, attacking us now? How'd you kill all our people now?" They were tormenting him. That was their entertainment. That's how he was performing.
We hope that Practical Christian Living helps you to live God's Word, that we might be doers and not just hearers. If you'd like to hear more of Robert Furrow's teachings, go to calvarytucson.com, where you'll find recordings from our weekday and weekend services at Calvary Tucson, and also archives of Practical Christian Living programs. We are grateful for your donations that help fund the production and broadcast of Practical Christian Living. You can donate simply and securely. Here's how. Log on to calvarytucson.com. Click on Donate, then select PCL Radio. Or you can mail your donation to Calvary Tucson, PCL Radio, 5170 South Julian Drive, that's Julian Drive, Tucson, Arizona, 85706. And when you donate $25 or more, we'll send you a copy of Pastor Daniel Fusco's book, Honestly. In it, Daniel reminds us that even when life gets messy and unpredictable, Jesus is still there, and Jesus is real. Thanks for supporting and listening to Practical Christian Living with Robert Furrow. We pray that you come to know the grace and peace that can only come from Jesus, and that you would walk closer with Him every day.